Om Jnanadhimadannasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Welcome to everyone. Today, here's who's here in the studio. And to those who have joined us online, we welcome everyone tonight. If you'd like to text in, the number is 650-245-7018. You can just text in a Hari Bol if you like, or if you have a question or a comment, something you'd like to add to the class, please feel free. Our operators are standing by to take your calls. And everyone who's on the internet, we welcome you tonight. As we keep the vibration going here at ISKCON of Silicon Valley, and as it's going all around the world. So tonight, we're going to look at the end of chapter 3 in the Bhagavad Gita. And in this chapter, it's beginning page 187, text number 41, or make it 40, I'm sorry. Text number 40 on page 186. At the end of this chapter, Krishna is describing how to conquer the lower self by the higher self. And begins with this verse, which will you can please repeat. Indriyani mano budhir.
Indriyani mano budhir.
Adhyadhishthana
muchate.
Eter vimohayat yesha.
Jnanam
avritta dehinam.
Indriyani mano
budhir.
Astyadhishthana
muchate. Eter vimohayat yesha.
Jnanamavrittadehinam.
A couple more devotees like to chant. Maybe use the microphone if we have them, please.
Indriyani mano buddhir.
Indriyani mano buddhir.
Asya adhishtana muchyate.
Asya adhishtana muchyate.
Eter vimohayati yesha.
Eter vimohayati yesha.
Jnanam avritya dehinam.
Jnanam avritya dehinam. One more.
Indriyani mano buddhir.
Indriyani mano buddhir.
Asya adhishtana muchyate.
Asya adhishtana muchyate.
Eter vimohayati yesha.
Eter vimohayati yesha.
Jnanam avritya dehinam.
Jnanam avritya dehinam. Word for word. Indriyani.
Indriyani.
The senses.
Senses.
Manaha.
Manaha.
The mind.
The mind.
Buddhihi.
The intelligence.
Intelligence.
Asya.
Asya.
Of this lust.
Lust.
Adhishtanam.
Sitting place.
Uchite.
Uchite.
Is called.
Etai.
By all these.
Vimohayati.
Bewilders.
Eshaha.
This lust.
Jnanam.
Knowledge.
Avritya.
Covering.
Dehinam.
Of the embodied.
Translation. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Purport. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. And therefore, Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13. Yasyatma buddhi kunapetra daktuke sati kalatradi shubhauma idjati yatirta buddhi salilena karichij janishwa abhigeshu saeva gokaraha. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage just to take a bath, rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. And here Krishna is identifying the sitting places of lust. And he says they're in the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. So this is called atishtanam, their sitting place. And the lust, vimohayati, is what bewilders the knowledge, the real knowledge of the living entity. It becomes avrita, a covering for the dehinam, the embodied. So again, the translation is the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So first, Prabhupada describes this as our enemy, and earlier on in the translation we've heard that the eternal enemy of the soul is this lust, kama rupa durashadam, and Krishna recommends that Arjuna do away with this lust, which is his enemy. And now in military terms he's describing how the enemy is taking different strategic points. And this is important to know, because through analyzing what is the situation on the battlefield, where the enemy is situated, we can then make a plan to overcome the enemy, which is lust. And so first of all, but the enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. So that's important. Generally, people don't know that they're fighting against an enemy. In fact, they're not fighting. They're just going along and being dominated by this force of lust. And they take it to be natural. However, we hear in the famous prayer, which you'll probably find in your shloka book, Prabhupada quotes often, Kama dinam katina katita palita durnideshas tesham jata mayina karuna natrapa no pashanti utsri jaitanata yarupate samprata labda buddhis tamayata sharanam abhayamam yunkshva madasye. So you can see if it's in that shloka book, Kama dinam katina katita palita durnideshas. So this is also being described, the lust is personified and is being called the bad masters. What are those bad masters? They're kam, krodh, lobh, and matsarya, lust, anger, envy, and so forth. And these are compared to bad masters. Means that I'm working for them. That's who's dominating me. That's who's telling me what to do. Did you find it? What page is that in? 401. Fantastic. We can have a look at this verse. 401. This is a beautiful, beautiful verse, and it's nice to chant also. It's quoted in the CC Madhya 22:16. If someone will run and get that. Madhya Lila 22:16, Srivas Pandit, our Pandit, is already on the spot. So kama adinam. So you look at the bottom of page 401 and say kama adinam of my masters, such as lust, anger, greed, illusion, and envy. Not very nice masters. Kama adinam. These are the masters that I'm working for. Kata, he's asking, how many, na, not, katida, in how many ways, palita, obeyed, durnidesha, undesirable orders. Tesham, of them, jata, generated, mayi, unto me, na, not, karuna, mercy. So, kama adinam, katina, katida, palita, durnideshas, tesham, jata, mayi, na, karuna, natrapa, no, pashantihi. O my Lord, there is no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. So, first of all, this is an important statement. There's no limit to the orders of lusty desires. And means that if we try to quench the thirst of lust, it simply expands, like putting gasoline on the fire, and it becomes more encouraged the next time. That's a fact. The more the senses are, we engage the senses unrestrictedly in sense gratification, the more they demand. So they become voracious after a while, and then addictions grow. In fact, it's easy to fall into any kind of little addictions. Looking at your cell phone it's like people do this all the time. They have to see what came in and so forth. The senses get addicted to certain things very easily. And then they demand. They demand more. And you say, no, not right now. And they say, yes, now. I said, now. And then, and if one isn't strong enough, one simply gives in to those senses. And where do they take you? To hell, basically. So, first of all, the devotee is recognizing that these are bad masters. Why do I want to follow these masters? And he's asking the question, for how long have I done this? How many ways have I obeyed these masters? And he says, I've rendered them so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. Even though it's with so much service to the bad masters, they've never given me any mercy. And in one translation, Prabhupada says, they've never given me time off. And I have not been ashamed to serve them, nor have I even desired to give them up. So this is the beginning of conquering the lower self by the higher self, is to be aware of the fact that the senses are giving orders. Notice it. Don't just think, I am going along, I'm doing what I want. Oftentimes people think that this is me. This is how I roll. But you're being rolled, you're not rolling. You're being rolled by the senses. In fact, Shankaracharya, in one of his poems, describes the senses as highwaymen. Highwaymen are scary. You're driving along the road at night. This happens sometimes in Vrindavan. People take the back road from Govardhan. This seems to be a notorious road. If people take the shortcut at night and you come around a corner and there's a log across the road, and then next thing you know, there's highwaymen with guns. They take all your money, and who knows what else. And then, you know. So Shankaracharya says, these highwaymen have hijacked me. They've taken all my wealth and they threw me in a hole. They threw me in a pit and just left me there to die. So we should be aware of the fact when we sing this song, Sharira Vidya Jal Jodendriya Tahikal, this is very serious. That, I mean, it's the happiest time of day when we sing the song, but it's a serious prayer that the senses are a network of the past leading to death. Sometimes when new people come and we say, here's our prayer, we say before we eat. The senses are a network of the path leading to death. And thought we were just going to have a snack or, you know, a picnic or something like that. But this is a serious problem for the soul who's being abducted by these bad masters, by these highwaymen who are throwing me into a ditch. And I must become aware of the fact that they're demanding so much of me and they're not my friends. Then, he says, I've not been ashamed to serve them, nor have I even desired to give them up. This feeling of shame, I have not been ashamed. So material life is an embarrassing situation for the soul. Basically, I've been profaned by my own stupidity and given in and become a victim to Maya. And therefore, Deyam Sada Padi Bhavagnam Abhishtadoham. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you can also have a look at this verse, but keep this page marked. Keep this one marked, and then look at this one. Deyam Sada Paribhavagnam. Paribhavagnam Abhishtadoham. 271. Let's have a look at this one while we keep the other one in place. 271. And here at the bottom, 11.5.33, this is a verse spoken by Karabhajana Muni, where he says, Dhyayam Sada Paribhavagnam Abhishtadoham. So Dhyayam means fit to be meditated on, and he's talking about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. And then he says, Sada, always, Paribhava, the insults of material existence. The insults of material existence. So this is Paribhava. And Gnam means to kill or to diminish. So to destroy these insults that we're getting by allowing ourselves to be victimized by these highwaymen, one should meditate on the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I thought I'd point that out. Now we can go back to our original spot. And in the next section, he says, Oh, my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty. So he's appealing to Krishna now, the personality of Godhead. We're back on page 402 in the Shloka book. O my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty. So he's appealing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's actually a person. Recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Who's he giving up? Bad masters. And who are the bad masters in Sanskrit? What is the term in this verse? Kamadinam. Kamadinam. So he's giving up these kamadinam, these bad masters of the senses, such as lust, anger, greed, illusion, and envy. And how is he doing it? He's appealing to the Supreme Personality of God. He's making this prayer. So then he says, now first of all, it's very important, he says, labdha buddhi. Labdha means to gain, and buddhi means intelligence. So you have to have some intelligence to move forward in spiritual life, because you have to conquer the lower self by the higher self. So the intelligence, the buddhi, has to be awakened. So now he says, my intelligence has awakened. And this is a starting point for many people. They realize suddenly that I'm meant for something more. And I'm simply following my senses, but no more. I'm going to try for this. I'm going to begin in Krishna consciousness. When Shakar Malik and Dabir Khas, who were Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, they had some name they were given as employees of the Muslim king, met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just afterwards. They became enlivened to give up everything and go join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they had written a letter to Mahaprabhu saying, we want to join you. And they had gone to meet him. And Raghunath Das, who was from a billionaire family in India, also saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he wanted to go off and join. And finally he did. It took some doing. And it does take some doing. Once one's intelligence awakens, and I say, this is it, I'm going, it's a long life. There are many stages one has to go through. Sometimes when devotees first come to Krishna consciousness, they feel, this is it, I'm going for it, no problem, and they jump in. And then, of course, there are challenges that come up. And Krishna warns us about these in the Bhagavad Gita, that there are many changes that take place in the body, the mind, in the material world all around us and so forth, and we have to learn to be tolerant. And we have to go the distance. We really do have to go the distance in this lifetime through the different stages of life. There's a stage of life when we're, of course, if we're very fortunate to be born into a family where the mantra the vibration is going on when we're just children, then that's due to our past activities in Krishna consciousness. But if not, at a particular time, we may pick it up where we left off previously, or by some very, very strong preaching of an empowered devotee, we may awaken somehow. One way or another, one's intelligence awakens, and he or she begins the process of devotional service. Then what? You have to fortify the intelligence constantly, because it can become easily bewildered again, especially in Kali Yuga. There are many distractions, and everywhere we look, even though now it seems like the norm, there are all kinds of images and sound vibrations which are bombarding us. And mostly there are lower vibrations that have to do with stupid things, that have to do with these bad masters of the senses and so forth. So there's not a lot of fortification if you just walk around the world unaided. So we have to have a very strong program in Krishna consciousness to go the distance. So even after the intelligence wakes up, that means we have to grab on to the lotus feet of the Lord and the process of devotional service. And then he helps us from many different angles. So then the devotee says, due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires, and I now come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Isn't that a nice prayer to make? Please engage me in your personal devotional service and save me. And I refuse anymore to serve these bad masters of the senses. And this is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22. Who knows what the name of the chapter is besides Srivas Pandit? That's right. Very good. Process of devotional service. You should be familiar with this chapter in the Bhagavad, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because it's where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching Sanatana Goswami about devotional service. And you should read this 50 times, 100 times if you can. Go over and over it, because it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally teaching Sanatana Goswami, and you get to listen to it. That should be relishable for your intelligence to hear that. And there's a purport to this verse given by Srila Prabhupada. Shall I read it?
Yes.
Absolutely. We got to hear this, right? This verse is also quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.35. Do we have one of those in here? You have it on your iPad mini? The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? I'm way up on Mount Meru here. Could you, somebody grab the mini iPad? Anybody who knows how to work an Apple? You're kidding me, right? Do you know how to work an iPad? Nobody has an iPad? There you go. You're hired. It's on the... Okay. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. I have it on there in my books, in my library. Just look it up. Let's see what we have. That would be Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.35. There's probably some fantastic commentary in there on this verse. And here we go. This verse is also quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.35. When we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we are saying, Hare, O energy of the Lord. Everyone say, Hare.
Hare.
O my Krishna. O my Lord Krishna. O Hare, O energy of the Lord. O my Lord Krishna. In this way, we are simply addressing the Lord and his spiritual potency, represented as Radha Krishna. As who?
Radha.
Sita Ram. Who?
Sita.
And Lakshmi Narayan. The devotee always prays to the Lord and his internal energy consort so that he may engage in their transcendental loving service. When the conditioned soul attains his real spiritual energy and fully surrenders unto the Lord's lotus feet, he tries to engage in the Lord's service. This is the real constitutional position of the living entity. What a relief. After being dominated by these bad masters of the senses for so long, since a time immemorial, now by good fortune one comes in contact with a devotee comes in contact with Shastra, and then the intelligence wakes up. And this is a happy day for the soul who realizes his real prospect in life. Did you find it? Did you find the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Oh, good. Okay. So, I'm continuing with the purport in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is on page 186, text number 40. And Prabhupada says in the second sentence, mind is the center of all the activities of the senses. And thus, when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. So just like that, the mind, when it hears about some kind of sense gratification, just picks it up. And then there's a process through which all the senses line up and they make some plan through the intelligence how they're going to get it. And then there's a lot of time wasted. Could be millions of lifetimes just trying to go after this kind of sense gratification. And one thing leads to the next. I think I mentioned the other day the way that the software works on the internet nowadays. If you write one word, you know, like popcorn, next thing you know, there's a whole lineup of products that are related to popcorn along the side that say, and you might like this. You need a little butter with that, right? And that's what you do? Okay. So that's the way the mind also works. A reservoir, just like the internet is a reservoir of all kinds of crazy ideas and images that just pop out of nowhere. Who knows where they're all coming from? I don't think even the creators of the internet or anybody who's programming knows what they've gotten themselves into. But the mind is like that also. It'll begin to conjure all kinds of ideas and then sub-ideas and related ideas, combinations, permutations that go on forever. And one can wander in this myriad images and thoughts and desires forever. So we have to become aware of the fact that the mind is this reservoir and that whatever goes into it sticks in there. Next, and as a result, the mind and the senses become repositories of lust. Repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. So that's interesting. Intelligence, first of all, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. So for the mind and the intelligence. So we know that there's a hierarchy mentioned by Krishna in this section of the Gita where he says, Indriyani prayanyahur indribhya paramanaha manasastu parabhudhir yo budhe paratastisaha. Lowest of all are the senses, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, above the intelligence is the soul. So now, just as in wartime, the enemy moves through and it captures different strategic points and it gets closer and closer to the capital. So as the senses take in this information and then it goes to the reservoir of all these thoughts, the mind, and it overflows and then it comes into the intelligence, then it's getting dangerously close because the intelligence is meant actually to figure out how to serve Krishna. But when it becomes infected by lust, then it starts to think about how to enjoy the material world. And living entities are pretty smart. They think of all kinds of ways. You look around and you just see, like, who thought of that? Who had time to think of all these? This modern civilization is running its course of all these thoughts and desires. They get into the intelligence, and we need an airplane. You've got to fly across the sky in order to get to New York City. Let's go faster. Transportation. I was watching the cars go by yesterday and thinking, what a lot of work, you know, to move around in a big pile of tin everywhere, dumping oil fumes into the air and everything like that. And where's everybody going anyway? Prabhupada used to point out dogs run on four legs and the cars run on four wheels. And if the purpose is the same, then there's no difference. And you see dogs sometimes. I always wonder how they know where they're going. Because in the Dham, I'll be walking around Govardhan and I see these Dham dogs. They run past me the other way, with very focused on just, they know. And anyway, they're going. They're going and going and going. And also, people drive every day. They're driving here and there and everywhere, and they're very determined. They think they know where they're going. But it's for the purpose of indirect or direct sense gratification. And therefore, this is an activity which is dominated by these bad masters, because the intelligence has been overtaken. So next, lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus the mind and the senses. So this connection we have to the material world is facilitated by the false ego. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes how prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara itya. I'll start that again. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. So the bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of this ahankara, thinks that I am the doer. I'm the doer of activities, which are in actuality carried out by material nature. So there's an identification with the body and the senses, thinking, I'm doing this. But Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Nakartritam nakaramani lokasya jati prabhu nakarmapalasam yogam subhavastu pravartate. That the soul is not actually acting. He's acting according to his sabhav. That's moving his nature that he's acquired from the three modes. The body is an accumulation of these modes of material nature, and they're working according to how the modes of material nature work, and the soul's simply there in a passive state. Nakartritam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarmapala samyogam. Nakarmapala samyogam. He doesn't create the fruits of his activities. He doesn't take in the... Let's look at the verse. It's in the fifth chapter, 14th verse. On page 256. Nakartritvam nakarmani. Nakartritvam nakarmani.
Nakartritvam nakarmani.
Lokasya srijati prabhuhu.
Lokasya srijati prabhuhu.
Nakarma palasam yogam. Subhavastu pravartate. And the translation is, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. And the purport is, the living entity, as will be explained in the seventh chapter, is one of the energies or natures of the Supreme Lord, but is distinct from matter, which is another nature called inferior of the Lord. Somehow the superior nature of the living entity has been in contact with material nature since time immemorial. The temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as the living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As soon as he becomes what?
Aloof.
Everyone say aloof.
Aloof.
It's a nice word to think of sometimes, that you just become aloof. It has something to do with the ship, you know, going off on the other side of the ship. You can look it up. Dictionary's right there. Aloof. Become aloof from the activities. And as long as he is in the city of the body, he appears to be the master of it. But actually, he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. But there's a way in which this ahankar gives me a false sense that I am the controller and the proprietor of the body, ahankara, vimudhatma. And so Krishna says this is a very foolish situation. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Ramesh. Then if we are not the cause of these actions, they're triggered by the three modes.
If we're not what?
We don't cause any action. They are brought by the three modes of nature and we respond to it. What is this concept of these desires that we carry from previous births, this vasanas that we have? Like, for example, I eat something and I fall sick. So my eating is a direct effect, the cause of my falling sick. So how am I to disconnect from that? I see a direct connection from my action to its consequence. That is karma, right?
Yeah.
How do I not do something?
You have to have information that comes from outside the system. And that's described in the Bhagavad Gita. You can look up this verse. Tatvavittu mahabaho kunakarma vibhagayo gunaguneshu vartanta iti matva nasajyate. Page 320. Third chapter. And the verse number is? 174? Page 174. So back up a little bit. Page 174. And the verse number for those of you at home, in case you don't have this version of the Bhagavad Gita, is 328. So we're not far off. Only 12 verses away, right? This verse, I'll say, please repeat. Tatvavittu mahabaho.
Tatvavittu mahabaho.
Gunakarma vibhagayoho.
Gunaguneshu vartanta.
Iti matva nasajjate. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Mighty Arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruit of results. Purport, the knower of the Absolute Truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in material conception of life. In the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And therefore he engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. Interesting word, circumstantial. I mean, everything's circumstantial. You can drive to your old neighborhood where you grew up, and there might be feel a pang. Oh, there's where my, grandma used to live and everything like that. But it's all circumstantial. Prabhupada wrote when he was in Vrindavan, all my relatives who used to love and care so much about me, where are they now? They're all a list of names. They've all scattered this way and that. The whole thing unravels, really does. And then you're left looking and it's like, oh, it was just a circumstance. It was circumstantial. Like foam bubbles coming together on the ocean and then breaking apart, just for some time. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. It's a whole other topic right there, isn't it? Don't get me started. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Tatvavit. Say it, Tatvavit.
Tatvavit.
For he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. So here, the Tatvavit is the opposite of the person who's the Vimudhatma, Ahankara Vimudhatma, because he's received knowledge from outside the system. Look up this verse in your shloka book. Maya mugda jivana nahi swata krishna gyan. Maya mugda jivana nahi swata krishna gyan. Are you coming back? Oh, you're getting it out. Fantastic. And while you're there, oh, in a second, when we discover where this is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can pull it out and we'll read it. 309 in your shloka book. Look at 309. What? Okay. 309. At the bottom, Madhya Lila 20:122. I'll say, please repeat. Maya mugda jivera nahi swata krishna gyan.
Maya mugda jivera nahi swata krishna gyan.
Jivere kripaya koila krishna veda puran.
Jivere kripaya koila krishna veda puran.
Not a happier sight on the planet than the Kurunath Prabhu bringing us the Chaitanya Charitamrita with this verse. Do you realize what Prabhupada has given us? The facility we could sit all day long, every day, and simply absorbed it going through the shastras like this, because he sacrificed to give us this knowledge. This is amazing. Okay, so here we are. Let's look at it. Maya Mugda, please repeat.
Maya Mugda.
Enchanted by the illusory energy.
Enchanted by the illusory energy.
That's a funny image. Enchanted by the illusory energy. I mean, or it's a little bit sad in a way. You see someone who, sometimes we go to, when we go out on Sankirtan, and this is a good reason to go out and meet people and preach and go around places, because you see people enchanted by the material energy. I went in a bar in Texas. I did, I admit it, I went in a bar. I do it a lot. Because they're good places to preach. People are sitting in there doing nothing. Actually, they're a little happy in there sometimes. Other places, I mean, there's a little ignorance in there, but you know, I saw a man, we went in, it was in Texas, yeah, in Dallas, we went, it was the last place we went. Bhakti and Linda was there. I think it was the first time we went on Sankirtan, and I took her into a bar. So we went in the bar, and we went around to all the workers, and we showed them the books and everything like that. And there was a man sitting at his table, and he had a big tub full of beers. And he was just sitting there watching TV, although he could barely understand what was happening, because he was so inebriated. And he bought a book too. But we were thinking as we were going through there how enchanted the people inside were. There's lights, and sometimes they sit there playing poker on these screens and things like that. And in casinos, people really get enchanted. They're very popular, very popular. Anywhere you put up casinos, people rush in there. The parking lots are full. And inside a casino, what goes on is people gamble day and night. In Las Vegas, there's thousands of casinos, and people go inside. There's no clocks. They don't put clocks inside because they don't want anybody to know what time it is. The temperature's controlled. The light's controlled. People don't know day or night, and they keep giving them alcohol as long as they keep gambling. And then there's sounds, and they calculate all these things. They put a lot of money into figuring out how to enchant people. And they just keep pulling the thing like, I might win, and so on and so forth. People gamble their whole fortunes in their house and everything away. And if we look around the material world, we find that this enchantment's going on in so many different levels. And this is the nature of the illusory energy. It's called kuakam. Even in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this description of the Lord's material nature is called kuakam, and it bewilders even the devas. Do you know the verse? The first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Who would like to recite it? Go ahead. Akurnath Prabhu, give him the microphone. And we'll have our judges ready to see how he does. Govindacharan and Vittal, you'll be the two judges.
Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwabhigya swarat tejo tene brahma hridaya adika vaye muhyanti yat surayoho tejo vari mridang yatavinimayo yatra trisargom rishat dhamna svena sadani rashta kuhakam satyang parang timahi.
Judges? 10? And whatever he said. So you got 2 tens. Let's give him a hand. Muyanti Surayaha. So in there it says, even the great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they become bewildered. Lord Indra becomes bewildered. Lord Brahma becomes bewildered by this illusory energy of the Lord. What to speak of, you know, all kinds of other living beings who are just enchanted by this material energy. Jivere. Jivera. Please repeat.
Jivere.
Of the conditioned soul.
Nahi.
Nahi.
There is not.
Swata.
Swata.
Automatically.
Automatically.
So this is an important word, swata. It means automatically, and it's naswata. Nahi swata means it's not automatic that the living entities who are bewildered in this trance can come out of it. Krishna gyan. Knowledge of Krishna. Jivere. Unto the conditioned soul. Kripai. Out of mercy. Koila. Presented. Krishna. Lord Krishna. Veda Puran. The Vedic literature and the Puranas. Supplements to the Vedic literature. Translation. The conditioned soul cannot revive his Krishna consciousness by his own effort. But out of causeless mercy, Lord Krishna compiled the Vedic literature and its supplements, the Puranas. And now we're going to listen to, if there is a purport, to Prabhupada's purport to this verse. So you got the idea, right? That it's not automatic, he can come out. So the living entity is bewildered by these three modes of material nature and the body. And Prabhupada's purport. A conditioned soul is bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy, Maya. Maya's business is to keep the conditioned soul forgetful of his real relationship with Krishna. Thus the living entity forgets his real identity as spirit soul, Brahman. And instead of realizing his factual position, thinks himself the product of material energy. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.5. Who knows the verse without looking? Pretty close. Yayasa mohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartam tatkritam chabipadyate. It's part of the verses that we sometimes chant before we recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have compiled verses. It's an important verse. Due to the external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. This is a description of Maya's action upon the conditioned soul. Thinking himself a product of the material energy, the conditioned soul engages in the service of the material energy in so many ways. He becomes the servant of lust, anger, greed, and envy. In this way, one totally becomes a servant of the illusory energy. Later, the bewildered soul becomes a servant of mental speculation, but in any case, he is simply covered by the illusory energy. Out of his causeless mercy and compassion, Krishna has compiled various Vedic literatures in his incarnation as Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is a Shaktivesh avatar of Lord Krishna. He has very kindly presented these literatures to awaken the conditioned soul to his senses. Unfortunately, at the present moment, the conditioned souls are guided by demons who do not care to read the Vedic literatures. Although there is an immense treasure house of knowledge, people are engaged in reading useless literature that will give them no information on how to get out of the clutches of Maya. The purpose of the Vedic literatures is explained in the following verses. What is the meaning of aloof? Who looked it up? Oh, you're looking for the microphone.
Distinct, especially in one's relation with other people. Indifferent, at a distance but within view, apart.
At a distance but within view. Apart, go ahead.
Toward the wind.
Toward the wind. And where does it come from?
Loof.
Here. Where is it? Oh. It means what? Toward the wind.
In the English Navy or the English sailors, we say a weather. Or when you turn your helm to the weather, it's a weather helm. And the opposite is a lee. To be in the lee means away from the wind. But it sounds like Luft sounds like the German word for wind or air is Luft. Like Lufthansa is the name of their airlines in Germany. So it probably comes from that Anglo roots of English where it was Germanic language. And Luft is another way to say what we now say a weather.
And it sort of indicates a turning away, right? I mean, you're aloof. It's sort of like, yeah, you're not paying attention. You're turning the other direction, right? Okay.
Go against the wind.
Go against the wind.
But, you know, to sail downwind, you turn to the lee. But to sail upwind is harder. You have to tack. You can't really, a sailboat can't go directly toward the wind.
Toward the wind. Distance, especially in relation with other people, indifferent, at a distance but within view, apart, aloof. Okay, thank you. So when one gets this information, Maya Mugda Jivanahi Swata Krishna Gyan, and then Jivere Kripaya Koila Krishna Veda Puran. It comes out of mercy from the Lord. He sends this information so that we can become tattvavit. And once one becomes tattvavit, one can understand that there's a difference between me and the body. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manyita tattvavit pashyan shrinvan spishan jigran ashnan gachan swapan shvasan Pralapan Vishrajan Grinnan Unmishan Nimishan Napi Indriyan Indriyateshu Vartanta Iti Tarayan. A person in the divine consciousness sees that while he's eating, sleeping, moving about, breathing, accepting, evacuating, that he's not actually doing anything. The senses are engaged with their objects and he's aloof from them. But the person who's in Maya is thinking that this is me and I'm the doer. And this is all created, but because of the contaminated intelligence that then assumes the false ego. Akurinath Prabhu.
Sometimes we see, even in the Bhagavatam, we see that when demons do something wrong, then they make the excuse that, well, it wasn't really me because we're not these bodies and, you know, the soul is really aloof. So, you know, I was just... I mean, like, for example, when Kamsa, you know, had killed all the babies of Devaki, and then finally he went to kill the other baby, and it was Yogamaya, and she flew up in the sky, and she chastised him and everything. And then he released them from prison, and he said, after all, we all just do what we're forced to do by nature. And, you know, so yeah, I killed all your children, but it really wasn't my fault, you know. And I guess the question is, going back to the other question about how do we see ourselves, I mean, we see ordinarily when we do something, there's a reaction for it. If we do something bad, we should expect a bad reaction. And similarly, if we're getting some good reaction, we think, oh, I did something worthwhile here, you know, I should do it again, or something like that. So how should we see that then if we really know that we're just riding along on this machine and the reaping the actions and reactions from the past, but we can try to avoid creating new actions? I mean, how do we respond, for example, if we've done something wrong? What should we do in terms of remorse and atonement and what do they call it? Retribution, you know, and you want to, if you feel like you've done something bad for someone, you want to give them back something or like that.
Srivas Pandit Prabhu wants to answer.
I just wanted to comment. The fact is that Kamsa used so many arguments, but he himself was trying to protect his own body against death all the while along. So they just used those arguments with no belief in them. Had they had any faith in them, they wouldn't have wasted so much of effort to protect their own body.
That's a really nice point. And Karunath Prabhu, you asked how we deal with that situation if we engage in some kind of vikarmic activity. And a devotee takes shelter of Krishna and realizes that Krishna within the heart will protect him or her from that reaction, or accepts the reaction. Srimad Bhagavatam, you can look up in your shloka book the verse, Swapadamulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavesha hari priyeshaha vikarma yach chot patitam katanchid dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha. You got it? 274, page 274. Now, that's 274 in the shloka book. So sorry for those of you who don't have a shloka book in front of you. It looks like this, but we'll read it for you. Okay, so this is, if you could get me, Govindacharan, 11th canto, 5th chapter, 42nd verse. I'll say, please repeat. Supadamulam bhajatak priyasya.
Supadamulam bhajatak priyasya.
Tyaktanya bhavasya hare priyeshaha. Vikarma yach chot patitam katanchit.
Vikarma yach chot patitam katanchit.
Tunoti sarvam hriti sannivishtaha. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. Indeed, if such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction of such sin. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we may have some more commentary on this, if you'd like to hear it. Okay. Here it is. You ready?
Yes.
Everyone okay?
Yes.
We're getting knowledge from outside the system. So this is how the intelligence becomes fortified by this hearing and chanting process. So we take shelter in these shastras and become acquainted with them, and they actually protect us. They protect our intelligence. We know exactly how to work. Krishna is also speaking from within the heart. Tesham satata yuktanam pajatam priti purvakam. Dadami puti yogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. Tesham ivanakam partam aham agyanajam tamaha. Dashem yatva bhavasto gyanadipena bashvata. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridesher junatishtiti. Ramayam sarvabhutani yantra rujani maya. Sarvasya chaham hridisani vishto mattak smitir kyanam apohanam cha. Vedashtya sarver ahame vivedyo vedanta kridveda vedeva chaham. So Krishna is there within the heart giving knowledge, and very specifically he gives knowledge of how to come to him, and he illuminates the heart just like as if with the lamp of knowledge. Gyanadipena bhashvata, and he dissipates the ignorance. And Krishna says that I travel with the living entity wherever he wanders. Brahmayan sarvabhutanam yanta rudrani maya. He's on this machine made of material energy, and I go with him. So Krishna's there within, and then he gives, as we heard just now, maya mugda jivara nahi swati Krishna gyan jivare kripaya koila Krishna veda puran. Out of mercy, the living Vyasadeva gives this information so we can come out also. Report. In the previous verse, it was clearly described that a fully surrendered devotee of the Supreme Lord has no need to perform ordinary worldly duties. Now, in this verse, it is revealed that devotional service is so pure and potent that a surrendered devotee of the Lord has no need to perform any other purificatory process. As described in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a surrendered devotee has no need to perform prayaschitta, or atonement for an accidental fall down into sinful activity. Since devotional service is itself the most purifying process, a sincere devotee who has accidentally stumbled on the path should immediately resume his pure devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord. And thus the Lord will protect him, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadureva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisaha. The word taktanya bhavasya, which just appeared in this verse, number 42, is very significant. As stated in the previous verse, a pure devotee realizes clearly that all living entities, including Brahma and Shiva, are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus have no separate or independent existence. Realizing that everything and everyone is part and parcel of the Lord, a devotee automatically is not inclined to commit sinful activities by violating the order of God. However, due to the powerful influence of material nature, even a sincere devotee may be temporarily overwhelmed by illusion and deviate from the rigid path of pure devotional service. In such a case, Lord Krishna himself, acting within the heart, removes such sinful activities. Even Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, has no power to punish a surrendered devotee who has accidentally committed sinful activities. As stated here, Krishna is Paresha, or the Supreme Lord, and all secondary lords, such as the demigods, cannot threaten the Lord's personal devotees. In his youth, Ajamil had been a pious Brahmana, engaged in the service of the Lord. Then, by bad association with a prostitute, he became practically the most degraded man in the world. At the end of his life, Yamaraj sent his Yamadutas to drag away the soul of the sinful Ajamil. But the Personality of God had immediately sent his personal associates to save Ajamil and demonstrate to Yamaraj that no secondary personality can disturb the personal devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya Pratijanihi Nami Bhakta Pranashati, the argument may be raised that the Smriti Shastra states, Shruti Smriti Mamai Vagne. The Vedic scriptures are the direct orders of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one may ask, how can the Lord tolerate that his orders be occasionally neglected, even by the devotees? To answer this possible objection, the word priyasya is used in this verse. The devotees of the Lord are very dear to the Lord. Did you hear that? So, it's very, very sweet, actually. So that, you know, the question is being asked. The Smriti Shastras are the ones that are saying that one should follow certain, you know, directions. And if one neglects those, how can the Lord tolerate it? And the answer is this word priyasya, which means that the devotees are very dear to the Lord. Although the beloved child may accidentally commit an abominable activity, the loving father forgives the child. Although the devotee of the Lord does not try to exploit the Lord's mercy by requesting the Lord to free him from any future suffering, the Lord, by his own initiative, frees the devotee from the reactions to accidental fall downs. This causeless mercy of the Lord upon his devotee is his parameshwaryam, shwaryam, or supreme opulence. This is the supreme opulence of the Lord, the causeless mercy upon his devotees. Gradually, the faithful devotee becomes free even from accidental fall downs. Because simply by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, what to speak of by actively rendering service to him, his heart is purified. Although the surrendered devotees of the Personality of Godhead may sometimes appear to be affected by mundane attitudes, they are inevitably protected by the merciful Lord and never actually defeated in life. So, in answer to your question, you know, there's every possibility that a person performing devotional service in the beginning can become waylaid or overcome by some temporary desire that pops up from the past and may even fall into vikarma. Vikarma yachchot patitam katanchid means somehow or other from some direction it comes and the person is contrarily engaged in a material activity. But svapadamulam bhajata priyasya, because he's very dear to the Lord, because his attitude is, Chaitanya Bhavasa Hare Prayeshaha. He's thinking always how to surrender to the Lord. Chaitanya Bhavasya. That's his bhav. He's thinking how to surrender, how to give up everything for Krishna. So if he's waylaid, then Krishna makes up for it. He goes on performing devotional service. And it's practical, too, because if one deviates one way or another, one must go on chanting Hare Krishna constantly and stay with the process of devotional service. And we can see that the person will be rectified. Even the reputation of such a person can be rectified if he or she remains sincere and goes on, takes their lumps, so to speak. In other words, whatever they did, this is important. We brought this up the other night in the anatomy of a fall down. If someone makes a mistake or has a fall down, they have to own it. They can't put it on someone else and say, it wasn't my fault. They made me fall down. Somebody else did it. They should actually own the... Yes, Akurna? Oh, did you ever find that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? You got it, eh? Oh. Lucky to have a pundit in the class, eh? Okay. Akurnath Prabhu?
I'm still wondering about, where the justice is for the victim.
You're the attorney. You should.
Maybe that's why I'm thinking that. If somebody is driving their car and texting at the same time, and then they get in an accident and cause someone to break their leg or lose their car and everything like that. And maybe they don't even have insurance, so they don't have enough insurance. And then the other person's life is very much severely affected by it. And I guess, we ordinarily think there should be some retribution. There should be some payback. There even should be some punishment. The government should say, you did something wrong, you have to go to jail, or you have to do some community service we expect that. And also we expect if someone does something very good, they should be appreciated, rewarded, they should become a hero, everyone is famous, everyone loves that, you're the person who saved the country at the battle of such and such by risking your life. So, we're talking about this question that was originally raised that, we're so used to thinking about the causes and effects of our activities. And how do we deal with that as devotees when we see these issues of like law and justice and someone did something wrong and shouldn't they have to pay?
Well, that's dealt with in the Manusmriti. There is a way in which there is there are strict laws of material nature that go on, because Krishna is the perfect moral agent and he's set up this system, although he's completely aloof from it, as he mentions in the Bhagavad Gita 5th chapter, 5th verse. You can look at that verse. 5th chapter, 15th verse is Nadate kashchit papam nachaiva sukritam vibhu agyana navritam gyanam tena muhyanti jantavaha. That the living entities, that he's saying, nadate kashchit papam, I'm not responsible for the sins of the living entities. Nachaiva sukritam vibhu, also their sukriti. Agnana navritam gyanam, it's due to this their knowledge being covered. Tenam huyanti jantavaha, they're covered over. The person's covered over by ignorance. That's the cause, is ignorance. However, there is a justice in the material nature. And for instance, in the Manusmriti, Manu says that if someone commits murder, he should be killed because it nullifies his sinful reaction. Rather than he'll suffer more by hiding it or not taking responsibility for it in this life, and in the next life he becomes more implicated by the sinful reaction. So there are ways in which it is dealt with on a practical level. And it's not an excuse to simply... the motive is important, and that's considered in justice also. What was a person's motive, isn't it? In the legal system, if a person intended something and their attitude is that they wanted to kill somebody, then there are extreme circumstances and punishment because of that. If it was an accident, then it may be less. If it's negligence, then that's also considered to be, you know, they're culpable for that.
Even it's, there's a difference if they do it like when they're enraged or something, as opposed to when they do it by planning and
like
malice aforethought. And
Yeah, like that.
So,
okay.
It reminds me of, I wanted to say, the story of the King Parikshit confronting the Kali in the first canto. And he asks the personality of religion to give evidence, you know, who has done this to you, to, you know, to be a witness against Kali. Even though Kali is standing there, he's kind of caught him red-handed. But the personality of religion really refuses to name his, you know, he says, well, some people say the cause of our suffering is this, and some people say it's that. Some philosophers
say
that's
because he was the victim.
Uh-huh.
And when one is the victim of the crime, to try to rectify it by as we just the verse I just sent out, which was about the providential reversals that one may encounter. And in the case was Maharaj Prithu, who was trying to perform 100 Ashwamedha yajnas, and at 99 Indra became envious and dressed up as a sannyasi and stole the horse. He kept stealing the horse, and because he didn't want to see that Prithu Maharaj would have 100 yajnas like him and, you know, lose his reputation as the person who had 100. And Prithu became angry and he chased after Indra. He wanted to kill him. Then Brahma came and he told him that you shouldn't try to reverse these providential happenings, because you become more entangled in that way, and you enter into the deepest, darkest regions of anxiety by trying to do that. If one, however, is charged with meeting out the law, then one has to do one's duty in that sense, and there's ignorance of the law is no excuse. And also, if one has the attitude that I'm not my body, therefore it doesn't matter, that's not an excuse either. One still has to suffer. The ones who are claiming that they're not going to name the perpetrator are the ones who have been victimized, and they take it, that is the devotee's attitude, as Prabhupada alluded to earlier, is that this is due to my past sinful reaction, and therefore I won't become vindictive about it. Yes?
Maharaj, that kind of reminds me of, I don't remember the verse, but I have the translation. This is from Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 23rd chapter, 42nd verse. It's prayers of Avanti Brahman. There, he beautifully says, I'll read the translation. He says, the Brahmana said, these people are not the cause of my happiness and distress. Neither are the demigods, nor my own body, the planets, my past work or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life.
Yeah. Nice.
It's the same context. Like, we keep blaming everything that happens around us, but it's so difficult to accept that. You
know? Yeah, in fact, in the first canto in that section, the Dharma personified says that if you try to name the perpetrator, you get the same reaction as the perpetrator. So much for victimology. Yes.
Yeah, you were reading before, or you were just reciting before that, Nasajate, you know, Tattvavittu Mahabaho, Aguna Karma Vibhageho, Gunan Guneshu Vartanta, Iti Matva, considering that this is all being carried out by nature, or etc., then he doesn't get entangled in the. Like, as soon as we start to think, well, that person did something wrong to me, and now I should get retribution against them, and so forth, then we start becoming entangled in that whole process of cause and effect. We start identifying with the causes and effects, namely material things, rather than identifying ourselves as the transcendental, you know, para prakriti. we start identifying with the inferior energy that's causing these things back and forth. And another point I had, or question, or you know, it reminded me of the Christian teaching that, you know, you should turn the other cheek. That part of Jesus's instructions that if someone sues you for your coat, you should give him your coat and your shirt also. If someone strikes you, you should offer him your other cheek. It seems like that you don't become, he's teaching the same thing, that you don't become implicated in karma by identifying with you know, your rights under the law of retribution, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but you become a...
Yeah, well, we have a duty to protect our property as well, and there are injunctions against perpetrators who will steal your property or destroy it or so forth. And when Vasudev was being threatened by Kamsa, he also invoked this rule that you must protect your body because it's what you have in order to become self-realized. And therefore, to sound an alarm or to, you know, put a defense against that is also reasonable because it's pragmatic. So just in summary, we began speaking tonight about how the senses, the mind, the intelligence are the sitting places of lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living and bewilders him. And then Krishna is going on to say that in the beginning we have to curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses. And then he talks about the hierarchy of the senses. And in the last verse in this chapter, he says, thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So we should develop this deliberate spiritual intelligence. This becomes a nishta, or we become firmly fixed in the clear idea that I am not the body, I am Krishna's servant, and we become directed by a higher authority, by the shastra and by our purified intelligence and the supersoul from within. And by that, we can avoid becoming victimized by the lower senses. And this is a joyful life beyond the harassment of the desires that enter into the mental system and the demands of the senses. And then one can actually direct one's own activities. One becomes free. And this is real life. Any texts that have come in from anyone? And anyone that's online, that's on the telephone, that wants to speak up in the last couple of minutes? Okay. Srivas Prabhu?
I wish to beg forgiveness from you and for Akrunath Prabhu that he was asking question and I just interrupted. So it's a breach of etiquette. I'm sorry.
We welcome such interruptions that are full of... Let's see.
We are told that we have four regulative principles. And when you're talking about the gambling and everything, it just came to me, is there a reason that there are these four and no other, or this is the specific? What is the effect
of these
four?
They're the four basic categories of sinful life from which all others... It's mentioned in a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which won't come into my head right now. But it mentions that these are four activities that are naturally, that living beings in the material world have a natural propensity for.
Okay. So can we not moderate them? Why do we absolutely remove them? Because when we talk to people, everybody is different.
What do you mean absolutely?
We choose to
them?
Absolutely remove these options from our lifestyle.
Meaning?
We take a vow not to.
We can replace them. We replace them. We don't absolutely remove anything. We just transfer. Like, you know, we have the best kind of food instead of something from, you know, a dead carcass or something like that.
Okay.
And if you need the taste, you know, ghee is like, it should fulfill all your mm-hmm. desires. And then gambling, you surrender to Krishna.
That's the biggest gamble.
That's a big gamble. You put your life on the line. He says, Sarvadharmam Parityaja.
Yes, yes.
You say, all right, I'll try it, you know. And then every day you wake up and you think, like, what's going to happen now?
Mm-hmm.
You know. And then
alcohol,
intoxication, sweet rice. Huh? In kirtan. Yeah, Prabhupada, when the devotees first started going on sankirtan and they started selling books, Mahatma describes this, I put it in my book, how they became so, he said it was like they were so intoxicated he couldn't find his way back to the van. And they wrote to Prabhupada and said, is this normal? And Prabhupada said, this is real intoxication.
And illicit sex.
Illicit sex. Of course, Krishna says, dharma viro do bhuteshu kamasmi bharatarshaba. If one engages in sex life, which is meant to procreate dharmic children, then he said, that's me. So there's no real, you know, all sex is regulated at one point or another. It has to be, otherwise it's just animal life. And, you know, that's why there's a men's and women's bathroom, and there's all kinds of just built into society, right? I mean, it's not, so... We have it at a certain standard there, but then it gets more for those who are more advanced, you know, who want to actually become more refined. Now we're going to put all the books away, and we have a text that came in, which we're going to have to hear right after the kirtan. And so stay tuned, everyone. Thank you very much. If, as efficiently and as quickly and respectfully as possible, let's put away all the books and the asanas. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Adibo. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.